Okay. Yes. No. The poachers in Europe all wear smoking jackets and yes. monocles. And
yes. Just... They all have lavish mustaches and a cane with a jewel on top.
Yes. And they only take one of each specimen.
Yes.
That's
yes.
all they need.
For the archives, good man. For the archives.
Hello. I'm Nipper Reed.
And I'm Phil Wolf.
So, settle down. Have a nice cup of tea and enjoy the Venomous Exchange Radio Podcast.
Crumpets, Nipper. I want the crumpets.
Well, as you've been such an extraordinarily good boy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Tonight, it is the lovely Phil and myself. We're going to be talking about a trip that I've literally just come back from the Iberian Peninsula. It was specific for vipers. We saw lots of other things, but it was specific for vipers. So we thought we'll just have a little talk through that as it's still fresh in the memory.
Yeah, you're still wearing your castanets as far as I know, right?
They aren't castanets, darling. Don't you worry about it. Yes. So... We, it was having finished the Euro list. Did I mention that?
Post facto, having finished the European list.
Exactly. Having finished the European list, I was kicking around because I do like to go on holiday. And I thought even though I've seen everything on the Euro list, there's three species that I didn't have photographs of. Long story short, when I got divorced, I lost some laptops in the divorce and some of the pictures were stored on them.
Wow.
I know, right? That's the real
It's tragedy. Such a Nipper thing to say.
That is the tragedy of divorce, I think. Yeah. We can all agree on that. So I didn't have any Vipera Lataste pictures. My Sawanai pictures were pretty ropey because they normally hide in bushes. So you tend to get like a head with a bit of bracken over it and stuff like that. So I thought, well, I'll try and put together a little Euro Viper trip. And fortunately, some chums of mine are very keen on European vipers. They're working their way through the list. One of them's trying to finish the Euro list, and one of them's trying to do all the snakes in Euro list in Europe list. So it was a good, well received idea, shall we say?
Excellent.
Yeah. So for this trip, I did an awful. Well, we all did, not just me. We all did an awful lot of research, which in the end paid dividends.
Really.
Oh, mate, this was the most flexible trip I have ever been on in terms of we didn't have any accommodation booked except for the first night.
Wow.
Yeah. So the three vipers that we wanted to see, the sort of like the epicenter for them is northern Spain, top end of Spain into Portugal. So like the Sierra de Gredos. The Picos de Europa mountains and that sort of thing. So that is currently plagued by wildfires at the minute.
Really?
Yeah, they've suffered with that. And also it has its own kind of weather windows there because of the mountains. So you can have, you know, fabulous sunshine in one area, then torrential rain in another area. So we wanted to be really, really flexible. Our target list was predominantly the vipers, which is Vipera aspis, which we talked about on the show a couple of shows ago.
Yeah.
Vipera sawanai and Vipera latastai. So latastai has recently been split into different subspecies, so that was cool. There were some other things that we really wanted to see, like a long-legged frog, which is quite a new species for Europe, recently described. There's a wall lizard, Lusitanica, Podarcis lusitanica, which is quite newly described. I've already seen them, but for the others, it was a nice addition for the trip instead of just looking at vipers. although I'd happily just look at vipers all day.
As I say, what's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that, yeah. Obviously. So we put a plan together. We read lots of scientific papers. And academics are so naughty about putting information out there. Literally, a lot of them have grid references down to the last meter of...
Really?
Oh, mate, we for the ASPIS, we were looking at a 3-year study on ASPIS in Spain, where they pinpointed on the map every specimen they found in a particular valley. So it was a no-brainer. There were some really helpful academic papers out there.
And I mean, that just goes to show you how much more class the poachers of Europe have than the poachers of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, they can have to read scientific papers as opposed to just road crews.
Well, no, they read scientific papers here, but they throw them all in a bucket and take them, opposed to the ones in Europe that are very selective in what they're poaching.
Yeah, to an extent.
Let me have my vision.
Okay, yes, no, the poachers in Europe all wear smoking jackets and yes. monocles. And
yes, just, they all have lavish mustaches and a cane with a jewel on top.
Yes, and they only take one of each specimen.
Yes,
that's
yes.
all they need.
For the archives, good man, for the archives.
Exactly that, super Victorian. So that culminated in the trip, which was last week. It's a good time of year to go because... It's the time of year when the neonates are all out, so you stand a better chance of seeing stuff. So we got up ridiculously early in the morning. It was horrific. I can't even talk about it.
9 a.m.
Oh, it wasn't that early. I was up at 3 o'clock.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's horrific. Drive to the airport. But that does mean that we landed in Santander at 11 o'clock in the morning, which was good. And you know, the usual faff, we picked up a hire car.
Everyone in the expedition English?
Yes, so it was all English. So we had Trevor, my dear friend Trev, who is close to finishing the Euro list. He's the chap I spent probably the most time in the field with. He's managed to put up with me for decades. So he's a super keen Euro herper, and as I say, he's very close to finishing the list. We had Mark, who is now director of Jersey Zoo, the wildlife conservation thing.
Excellent.
We had Matt, who is a zoo manager in the UK. They're both keen field herpers as well. And then we had Dan, who's an ecologist, who is also working his way through the Euro list. So it was a really... Yeah, strong team. It was good. We picked up a hire car, which we immediately upgraded because the one they gave us was ridiculously small. You know, we're all reasonably large chaps, so plus all our camera kit and all that sort of thing. So we got a new, bigger hire car. And the sensible thing would have been to drive to the accommodation and unpack and everything, but we didn't. We drove straight out into it. We drove straight to a site. It was very American in terms of the distances between sites.
Okay.
Because a lot of times in Europe on a field herping trip, you know, you're looking at maybe 40 minutes to an hour's drive between sites. But Spain is a very big country. We're looking about 2.5 hours to the first site.
Now, how long of a plane ride is it? It's only like an hour two plane ride, right?
Oh, for us, it's 2 hours, just under 2 hours, literally an hour and 50 minutes to the top end of Spain. Obviously, a lot longer to the bottom end of Spain, but geographically from where we are to get to Santander, which is northern Spain, it's just under 2 hours. It's lovely.
Now, and what was what you said neonates are coming out? What's the weather like? Because I remember someone saying that, I guess, that region gets colder than the rest of the peninsula faster just because of the winds off the bay.
So if you think of Spain as a square, because it's nearly a square country, sort of square tips on a sort of axis, the northern part of Spain where the Gredos is a very maritime climate. So it's very, very influenced by the Atlantic currents and that sort of thing. So it does get very cold. the position of Spain, or the fact of its position in the equator, it is a hot country. Mm-hmm. But it's really weird. You've got almost two distinct habitat types in that northern part of Spain. So you've got one side of the mountain range, which is very, very lush and green, almost, although the temperatures aren't the same, almost subtropical, like cloud foresty, very, very green. The other side of the mountain, which is in a rain shadow, that sort of area is desert. It's like really dry scrub.
Yeah.
So you've got two distinct habitat types there.
And both of this is in the, what I would call the panhandle above Portugal.
That's it. So it's very Floridian in terms of,
yeah, yes,
it's almost like that little bit. So if right, you look
at panhandle like Oklahoma,
yeah, it's like a little panhandle that goes to the top of Spain and then down into Portugal, and that is exactly the area that we were looking.
Excellent.
In. So we drove to the first site, which we found from an academic paper, which was a mid-altitude mountain valley. Very, very dry in this area. And we, you know, there was a lot of evidence of wildfires and that sort of thing. And we found no vipers.
Wow.
To be fair, by the time we got there, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
It's not ideal viper.
Right.
You know, you want to be out first light waiting for vipers to come out and get warm. This was like late afternoon. Temperatures were probably in the high 20s, low 30s, so it's not really great. We caught a lovely adult Timon, which is nice to see. But we cut our losses at that. We herped it for a couple of hours. We didn't find anything of any use.
And that one Timon was the one you sent to the group chat?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful little thing. Feisty, as they always are. But yeah, lovely to see, but it was so hot, there was nothing moving, really. So we drove to a really famous site for vipers near Burgos, which is sadly, it's so famous between herpers that it's really herped out now. You can see it's scarred from flipping rocks.
Really? Just pockmarked?
Yeah, it's horrible, really. I won't be going there again. I've been there. It was a repeat trip for me, and it just looks trashed by herpers, which is really unfortunate because it's quite a small site, like a lot of dry stone walls. And anybody that's into field herping, they will know it in Europe as the viper site to go to. Tons of mice and stuff like that we flipped.
Oh, wow.
Tons of foals, but again, no vipers, way too late in the day. So we ended up driving further on. We're all quite tired by this time, obviously. We've been up since 3 o'clock in the morning and it's getting to like mid-evening. So we thought we'll have some food and we had some accommodation booked. And as we drove up to the accommodation, it looked disastrous. It looked like
something. Really?
It was kind of in the middle of nowhere and it looked like some farmyard.
Really?
Well, we thought, well, this is odd. But when we actually drove into it, it was a really nice sort of like little mountain auberge. So it was really set up for mountain bikers and kayakers and that sort of thing.
Okay, all right.
Food was great.
Excellent.
Everything was clean, cheap and cheerful, but really, really, really good. And our viper site for the morning was literally 10 minutes away from it. So, that is the beauty of the internet now. You can choose a place and put a drop in and it'll tell you where to stay.
Yeah.
So we ate lots and drank lots and then we went to bed and we got up early the next day, this time much more useful for vipers. We got up just before it was getting light. Bear in mind, we don't get much daylight in Europe at this time of year. So it was 12 hours almost dead. So it was getting light, just starting to get light at 7.
Okay.
And it was dark by 7, fully dark by 7.
Okay, yeah.
So it wasn't, you haven't got a massive amount of search time. And to be fair, you're looking at mountain valleys. So if you imagine like, a hand on a map with the fingers spread out, you're talking of searching between the fingers.
Oh, wow.
So those valleys, although the sun is up at 7, aren't going to get light for another hour, 2 hours or something like that. So we was out on site. Mark and I had a phenomenal really, I hate to use the word, birding experience. I know, I'm turning to
a closet. It's all right. You can talk about it.
I'm turning to a closet birder. We had a pair, we think they're a pair, of Imperial Eagles.
That's cool.
Literally flying around us. Though, you know, ridiculously big.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a birder, so I don't know. But I can't think we get many birds in Europe that are bigger than that.
Yeah, at least 6 foot wingspans, right? Oh,
just huge birds. Yeah. But they were literally flying around us. That was phenomenal. So we were searching this area, not seeing very much. And then points to people that are field herping or just starting field herping, walkie-talkies are essential.
Essential.
In the mountain area, you can, you know, in terms of distance, you might only be, I don't know, 500 meters away from someone. But if you're in mountain valleys, there is no contact. You can't see. And we were all fairly spread out searching. And then we got the lovely call on the radio, which everybody wants, is I found one. So we was in an area for Lataste and Aspis, like a sort of crossover zone. So you could find both in this area. So when Trev said, I've got one, he didn't elucidate any further than that. We knew he'd found a snake, but we didn't know what it was. So we've all charged to his location, and there was like an abandoned farm building, typical abandoned farm building in the middle of nowhere. And herpers are weird people because we all get excited about finding trash.
Yeah, right.
And he'd found some big roof panels that had been left, so some big sheets of tin. And the first one he flipped, he found a little ass viper underneath.
Excellent.
Which was lovely because that was new for everybody except for me, had not seen the ass viper before. So that was a really positive start to the trip. So we spent a little while taking pictures of that, which was lovely. And then we decided we'd move on to another site. You know, so we're looking for three vipers. We'd already got one down, which was great. We went to another site, again from an academic paper. We found a dead viperine snake, which was sad, but another good tick. But we felt like a lot of the habitat there was now private gardens and things like that, so we couldn't really search in the area we wanted to. I did get a new dragonfly tick, which is very good for me, which I don't see very often, which is good. And then we went on from there. I'm just going to refresh my memory on my notes. I can't remember where we went after that.
How often do you actively, I want to say, remind yourself that there's dragonflies that you need for your list?
For wherever I'm going on a trip, I will look and see what dragonflies are in the area.
Okay.
If I'm going on a herp trip, I won't. That's very rarely will I make a detour for a dragonfly unless it's something really unusual.
Sure.
Yeah, I will photograph them and record what I've seen, but it depends on the type of trip. If it's a target-based trip, I probably won't go specifically for a dragonfly. When we was in America, when we was in Arizona, that was amazing. When we went to Bob Ashley's place,
yeah,
that pond in the because it's like the only standing water for miles. Dragonfly species were insane there. I got loads of new things there.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't know if because it's almost like the birding thing. Like I am not a birder. But if I know that there's a particular unique bird in this area that we'll be traversing, I'll keep my eyes peeled for it, right?
Yeah, exactly that. Okay. Exactly that. Yeah. Okay. So some of the other little things that we saw, Dan found a big water trough in Spain. Anywhere in Europe that's dry, water troughs, any standing water is a really good bet. You get a lot of species that will specifically use water troughs, like painted frog and things like that. So we had Bufo spinosus, which is the spiny toad. We had a suspected painted frog. I think I saw it briefly, and then it it went. Bosker's new, and we had a little juvenile Timon as well in that little area, which is all cool.
Now, is any of this stuff actually in the trough? Like, is it a trap point for animals where they can't get out?
It's not really a trap point. So,
or is it like the wetness around the trough?
It's both. So this trough was probably 20 feet long.
Oh, wow.
A concrete, 20 feet long, probably only a foot and a half wide.
Okay.
And the actual water in it was probably a foot deep.
Okay.
Quite a lot of vegetation in there. There was tadpoles in there. There's a lot of frogs, probably Perez's water frog in there as well. But these big areas of standing water, they do attract, you know, a lot of Spanish amphibians will specifically lay in these troughs. Salamanders, we didn't see any salamanders in there, but yeah, it's always worth checking out troughs. So we saw, the other thing we saw was a slow worm, one of our little legless lizards. We sort of have a slow worm there.
Very cool.
And then the lovely Eric, who we've had in the podcast before, he said, oh, you're not far from this place where I've seen Sawanai before. You should go and check that out. So we drove, and it's a war memorial from the First World War.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, some people already know this site. So... we went down there, and it's an amazing, like a giant pyramid thing. And there's sort of, I don't think wild is the wrong word, semi-wild horses all around it.
Feral,
that's the word I was looking for. Feral, yeah. Feral, yeah, feral horses all around it. And there was Pedasus muralis all over the war memorial. So like the European war lizard.
Yeah.
So that was great. And we're looking around, and it was terra typica for vipers. It was short grass. It was juniper bushes. It was gorse bushes. It screened vipers. And we gave it a really good search. And then Dan hollered in his Scottish holler. And then he found a Sawano.
Excellent.
It's good. The nominate form, so the nominate color pattern, which is really attractive. So interestingly or not, Sawanai used to be considered berus until the 70s. Yeah, it was a subspecies of Ibira berus until the 70s, and then it was raised to how I don't know, because it looks nothing like it, but there we are. But yeah, so I think it was 75, 76, it became a full species in its own right, and it looks completely different.
Yeah.
So we all started taking pictures of the Sawanai, which was very, very cool. Now, the thing with Sawanai is you've got different levels of toxicity, a bit like copperheads.
Okay.
Depending on the location,
mm.
you've got different levels of toxicity. So the more westerly the species or subspecies, the more toxic it is.
Oh, wow.
And it's a massive jump between populations, if that makes sense. So you've got, I'm going to crucify this.
So the less populated areas of the West have a higher potency of venom.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. So, and they're found in both Spain and Portugal. So the top end one is Vipera sawanai cantabrica. And that's sort of in the Cordillera Cantabria area of Spain, the top of Spain, sort of like Picos de Europa, and then slightly down into Portugal. The other species is sawanai, but that's more... the bottom end of northern Spain, Portugal, and it dips into France slightly, extreme
northeast.
Yeah, well, not extreme southern France as the geography of France is. So the one that we found was Cantabria.
Nice.
Yeah, which was cool. And the Western population, so the Cantabrian ones, their LD50 is 6.9.
Okay.
So that's a 20 gram mouse, so 6.9. Yeah. So not like an Aspis, but it's
still would suck.
Still would suck, yeah.
Yeah.
But when you look at the eastern populations, which is like the Basque country populations, it drops down to 23.1.
Oh, wow.
There's a massive difference.
Massive change.
Yeah, but it's the same snake.
Very interesting.
It's just weird, yeah.
Now, is that composition of venom? Is it like a particular set of enzymes or something?
I don't know. I do know to memory, I think the venom's a different color.
Really?
Yeah, it's really weird because and having seen both subspecies, they both look, there's no morphological difference to them at all.
Wow.
And the Portuguese ones, I think, are kind of between the two.
But, very interesting.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It makes you wonder if it is ontogenetic, and just the Western form never changes.
But potentially, or whether it's one form is feeding almost exclusively on lizards, and the other form is feeding on mammals. So the lizard one needs to act faster, maybe, or something. I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah, it's really weird. You got to think these are montane vipers. Or the Western ones are montane vipers, so they don't get a massive amount of time above ground. You know, they're at altitude, so you know, conditions of snow and all that sort of thing will limit their activity above ground. I don't know. I couldn't tell you the reason why, but
still fantastic. So two down, one to go, right?
Two down. So we was absolutely stoked for that. So on the third day, we drove a long way, and I had a gift, which you might remember from Arizona and various other trips, that if I'm in a car and I have no responsibility, I have the ability to fall asleep in seconds.
Yes,
And sleep the whole journey and just wake up wherever we are.
Legitimate talent.
Yeah. And
especially when jet lagged.
Yeah, true to form. There were some large drives between sites. So we're looking at 3-hour drives. To me, everywhere was 5 minutes away.
Nice.
Much to the consternation of the others. But it was, when you've been doing what I do for as long as I've been doing it, you get sleep whenever you can.
And for sure.
When I'm on an aircraft or when I'm in a car, bang, I'm out. So anyway, so we drove to the next site. We drove to the accommodation, stayed the night, and then we got up super early again, and we went to an extremely high altitude site. It's phenomenally beautiful.
Now, what's extremely high altitude?
I can't tell you the exact spot height. It was good altitude for Europe.
Okay.
For vipers, it's probably at the limit you're going to get.
What, 10,000 feet?
I'd say more than that.
12?
Yeah, probably more than that. It was it was Alps height. So it was a decent height. So it's Price height, I would say. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's breathtakingly beautiful alpine meadows with crystal blue lakes. And I'm not going to name the lake. I'm not going to name the lake, but, you know, people that know will know what I'm talking about and where I'm talking about. We had to, I've been there before and we drove right to the lake, but now they've blocked the bottom of the mountain off and you have to take a taxi to the top. Ka-ching!
Wow. Why would they do that?
I don't know. At 12 euros a pop. I don't mind because it's ecotourism and it's keeping the place nice and... At the end of the day, it is what it is, you know.
So you have no way of, you have to hike.
To get from where they block the mountain off to the top is a hike gap. It took us 20, 25 minutes in the taxi.
Oh, wow. So now is there roads beyond that?
No. Okay. The road finishes at the mountain lake. That's close. It's not the top of the mountain, but it's close to the top of the mountain.
And it's not like you were going to stop and herp along the way anyway.
No. So what we in fact did, there's a lower lake, which is probably lower by 1,000 meters or something like that. And then there's an upper lake. We would have stopped and herped the lower lake first and then gone up. We did it in reverse. So we got dropped off at the top where there's a little auberge that sells some drinks. And one of the biggest dogs I've ever seen, absolutely beautiful. That was really nice for me. As you know, I have a Spanish Mastiff at home. Mm-hmm. And to see the Spanish Mastiffs all over the hills herding the sheep and doing that, it was phenomenal.
That's really cool. Beautiful. That's very cool.
Mark, not so keen.
In their natural habitat.
Yeah, in their natural habitat, as it were. Right. So we
heard. You said that Mark wasn't so keen?
Mark does not like big dogs.
Really?
Which makes me laugh because he deals on a daily basis with bears and gorillas and whatever, has no fear of those whatsoever.
In the US, we say he had a bad experience.
Yes, I think he did. yeah. He's got the most savage dog, but there we are. He was not so keen, but I thought the Mastiffs were absolutely stunning running around. So we went and we started at the lower lake, first of all. So we walked down the hill, which was easy, down the slopes, beautiful, you know, sort of the hills are alive type thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Literally, crocuses out. It was so picturesque. Blue skies, absolutely blue water. Phenomenal. And then we started herping this area. And it was sort of very price I like, but greener. So There was a lot of scree slopes, but between the scree slopes were between areas of really green vegetation sort of thing. And I was fortunate after about an hour searching to find a concolor suwannai. So that was phenomenal because that is quite a hard find. Beautiful, beautiful species. Anyway, but to see a concolor version is like a lottery win. That was really cool. So,
very cool.
Yeah, I was really pleased with that. And then Trev saw a bilineata form. So that was all three forms, really.
Wow.
Fortunately, we couldn't catch the bilineata form. It was just between the rocks. We couldn't.
Did he at least get like a quick shot?
He didn't, unfortunately. He did the decent thing and called everybody else. But by the time we got there, it's sort of, it's hard to describe, it's sort of like cast limestone. I don't think it's limestone, but it's sort of like a cast rock. So, you know, these rock tunnels go down so far, and it's full of heather and all that sort of stuff. So It's very hard to catch stuff in there.
Like a quartz vein.
Yeah. So we was absolutely stoked with that. And then we, of course, wanted to herp the other side, the big lake. So we had to then turn around and then walk up the hill, up the slopes, mountain slopes, not so easy with a big rucksack full of camera kit. I was blown out my ass by the time we got to the top of there. But it was worth it because Matt, within a couple of minutes of us cresting over the top of that hill and coming down the other side of the lake, he caught a lovely adult bilineata suwannai.
Excellent.
Just incredible, absolutely incredible. So in one trip, we'd seen the three color forms, which was just brilliant. So we took some time photographing there, and then we went down to the lake itself. And there is a population of very rare rock lizards there, which is Archaeo lacerta monticola.
Okay.
Managed to find them, which is not an easy task. There's tons and tons of wall lizards there, but to find the really green monticola was quite hard, but we managed it in the end. We had alpine newt in the lake. We had loads and loads of midwife toads. We had more spiny toads. I'm trying to think what else we saw. It was such an idyllic sight. There were so many herps there. It was ridiculous.
It's crazy, man. Alpine newts just floating around in the wild.
Alpine newts in an alpine lake.
I love
it. That is the thing. I mean, a lot of people in the UK have alpine newts in the garden, but they're invasive.
Right.
But
it's not the same.
No, to see an alpine newt where it should be.
Yeah.
Oh, big crayfish up there as well.
Really?
Iberian spotted, white spotted crayfish.
Interesting. I got to Google that.
A huge thing. That was a beautiful day. And then we did some more, or they did some more driving. I didn't drive at all on this trip. It was phenomenal. I just slept. I was chauffeured around. this was a long drive, but we were frightened we were not going to get the TAS, and we really wanted to do the trifecta on this trip.
Yeah.
So I had a nailed on site from Dan, who we've also had on the show, where he'd seen them before.
Right.
And he said, try here. It's a really good site. And it's a kind of World War II area that's been left. So it's very, very overgrown, but a piece of rough land, but literally on the coast, waves breaking.
Wow. Over.
Yeah. But it's in Portugal, which is an awfully long drive.
Yeah.
But not for me. So we drove down to this site, and we were buggered by the weather, shall we say. Unseasonable sea fog had rolled in.
So, really?
Yeah. I mean, we were literally not 100 feet from the beach. And if you've been to that part of the coast, you know, it's big waves. It's very windy. Temperatures were really, really low. So we weren't super confident we were going to find anything. We did have we got there early thinking it's going to be sunny, and the weather was so bad, we ended up going for a lovely Portuguese breakfast, which was pretty good, I have to say.
What, pray tell, is a Portuguese breakfast?
Well, I had like a scrambled egg, and then like a prosciutto toast with tomatoes and ham on. Just delightful. And then the little Portuguese, like the name I can't remember, the little tiny custard Portuguese tarts. Oh, it's a Portuguese. Look it up. This is a famous Portuguese. Little tiny. They're about as big as, I don't know. They're about that big. Little round Portuguese tarts filled with custard. Beautiful.
Excellent.
And very, very good, strong coffee.
Oh, the whole reason you go.
So, and then we went back to the site. It hadn't really warmed up that much, to be perfectly honest. We did see, I've got a new bird tick. I haven't turned into a bird. It's embarrassing. Ready.
Do you have the app on your phone with the calls?
I do not. I'm not that bad.
All right, yet. Good. If when you get to that point, then we can bitch.
Okay. So we got Portuguese. We got red-eared waxbills, which were very cool to see flying around. We thought, right, we're not going to see anything out on the crawl now. So let's try flipping stuff. So we started flipping stuff, and Matt found an absolutely stunning little Vipera latestai.
Hell yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal. So latestai, the taxonomy of latestai is really up in the air at the minute. There's people arguing about it. So as it stands, I think, and I'm happy to be corrected on this, you've got latestai, which is like central northeastern species.
Right.
You've got Latestai gadetania, which is like extreme southeast Iberian Peninsula, Portugal and Spain. And then you've got the new one, which I'm not sure we're still counting as yet. I'm very confused. But you've got Latestai arundana, which is, I think, if it's still extant, is Morocco, Tunisia, and the very bottom of Portugal. That used to be Monte Cola. It used to be the test on Monte Cola, but I think that we're not.
But now Monte Cola is still Monte Cola in its proper place, right?
I'm not sure. I think Arundana
absorbed it.
Absorbed it.
But what a fucking shame.
Yeah, but I'm not 100% sure. I used to keep them. I used to keep Latest and what is now Arundana. Anyway, so Matt found this absolutely cracking little viper. So we spent some time photographing that, which was lovely. And then, as good herpers, we thought, well, we won't rest on our laurels, even though we've got all three vipers and all three color forms of, apart from melanistic, of Suwanite. We thought,
you need an adult latest.
We thought we will drive back to Spain. And carry on herp in Spain.
Yeah.
Just before we left, we got a call on the radio from Dan that he'd found a big latas. We get running over there, and it was a smooth snake.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. But to be fair, where it was, the position where it was in this like rock wall area, you could only see a little bit of his body. It was a good shout. He found the snake, and he hadn't seen a spoon snake before.
Still good then. Still good.
Yeah. So he got that, which was nice. And then we drove back to Spain, which again took 5 minutes, as far as I'm concerned. Literally, no problem whatsoever. As soon as we went into Spain, we went to another altitude hike, not as high as before, but quite high altitude reservoir for Galland's rock lizard.
Okay.
Which was cool. So we got Galland's rock lizard. We got, prior to that, we stopped at another little site and we got the new war lizard that was newly described war lizard, Podarcis lucis danica. We got Natrix mora.
That's attractive.
Yeah, I mean, quite a few people keep them in the States. I think they're quite a popular.
It's typically confused with Natrix, but.
Yeah, I think it looks nicer. It's a better pattern. we got more Timon. We got more Spinosis. At that site, we got Marbled Newt, which is really cool.
Nice. That's cool.
That is lovely. And some really nice examples of Perez's water frog. I mean, I've seen hundreds of them, but these were really real stunners. Mark saw Bocage's war lizard. None of us did, but he found it. He saw it, couldn't catch it. And then we went back to our accommodation to celebrate with incredibly good food and alcohol. And on the way back from that, we found Natterjack toads.
Cool.
Literally in the middle of civilization. It was lovely. And then we're running out of time, so we wanted to go to the very famous Tendi Valley, which, it looks like you're in Costa Rica. It's really weird. It gets such heavy rainfall because it's a mountain valley. We went there, and our targets were Salamander Alfred Schmidii, which is an extremely rare form of fire salamander. Mm-hmm. We were fortunate enough to find one of those, which was good. We found, first of all, found some gold striped salamanders, which is stunning. We had really, really heavy rain. So all the way through the week, the beauty of the flexibility was we could kind of avoid areas of bad weather. So we were moving around the storm, but we couldn't outrun it this time.
Yeah.
And it was a very bad storm, like storm warning type storms across Europe. And on the last day, we copped it big time. But we were looking for salamanders, so heavy rain didn't really matter that much. As I say, we found the Alfred Schmidii. We were just about to take pictures of it. And then Matt, if you're listening, Matt did the cardinal sin of dropping the salamander between two logs, and it escaped before it even got a photograph of it. There we are, which we didn't mention to him again. That's fine.
No tortoises.
No, not in that part of the world. No,
really.
Yeah,
there is a Spanish tortoise, right?
Yeah, but more
south east.
Not in that sort of part of the world. Okay. We found more slow worm. We went to a different site, which was Forlatas, but obviously it was torrential rain. We found more slow worms.
Cool.
And then we flew home the next day.
That's great, man.
A phenomenal trip. I like all herping trips. When you sit back and think about it, the chances of... So you're sitting at home and you're looking at research papers and you're deciding where you're going to go. And then to go to that habitat, and then you've got to search that habitat. And these are massive areas. And then, the densities of these vipers is not massive. And to find all three vipers in one trip, and then to find all three color variations of Sewanii. What a blessing. It was amazing.
It's a great expedition.
It was really, really good. Some of that was down to... a lot of hard work in the field. Some of that was down to a lot of hard planning, but a lot of that's just luck, to see.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be in the right place at the right time. It's phenomenal.
For sure.
Not to be taken for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good that, you know, everyone got something new, including yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen everything before, but I hadn't seen the other color forms.
And yet you hadn't seen the eagles.
I haven't seen the eagles. And
see what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone saw something new, you know?
Yeah, that was my first European trip where I haven't had a target. And it was really, really relaxing.
That's good.
It was very difficult.
Well, you still had a target. It just wasn't one required for your...
There wasn't the pressure. Towards the end of the list, I was really, really feeling the pressure.
Yeah.
I've said it before, when I went to Bulgaria for Blochstein, my head was coming off because I couldn't find, you know. Yeah. And it's not, you know, you're in a lovely place, you're not working, and you're fortunate enough to be healthy and able to do this sort of thing financially. Yeah. And I'm still moaning because I'm not seeing something. That's not who I, you know, it's not a great way to be. So it was lovely to have no pressure and just walk around in beautiful alpine scenery.
And think about this. You're relaxing with your chums.
Exactly.
Having exquisite coffee in northern Spain. Like,
exactly.
Who's better than you, you know?
Exactly that. Exactly that. I mean, we were averaging 15,000 to 17,000 steps a day.
That's good.
And that is at altitude. You know, that's it's very different atmosphere in the car to an American trip.
Elaborate, please.
This English sense of humor,
just dry,
is so offensive.
Oh, really?
In terms of, it's so personally offensive
to the other car members, or just
to the other car members.
Okay.
Whereas I think in America, everyone's really nice to each other and they're really bigging each other up all the time, which is lovely.
No, that's just our group.
Okay, then.
Yeah, that's just our group because we actually like each other.
Yeah, but I just think in the UK, if you don't like somebody, you're really, really polite to them.
Oh, I see it. If you hate someone, you're like, hey, how's it going?
But and you're, yeah,
so exactly. Nice to see you.
Exactly that. Whereas when you're with your mates, it's, you knob. You know,
yeah,
it's completely different. Sure. And it was a very funny trip.
It's good, man.
Very good.
That's what it's all about, man.
100%. So now we've got to plan trips for next year.
Yeah.
I've not got a holiday now for 3 weeks, which is ridiculous.
Oh my God. God forbid.
I know. I haven't got another herping trip.
I managed to switch days with my employer and I get 2 days off in a row.
That's awesome.
On a Saturday.
Yes. That's good.
Yeah. Next week. Have no idea what we're doing, but something.
No, that's good. go herping.
Yeah. I thought about that, but I don't know. I feel like, I feel like just that one day is not enough. Cause like where I want to go in Florida, I need at least like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Minimum.
You need to finish your Florida list.
Well, the problem is, everything I know, everything that is, I've got everything local to me. Mm. With the exception of things that are legitimately extirpated. Excuse me. But I need Keys stuff and I need Panhandle stuff and I need Sandhill stuff. And that's not going to happen on an afternoon drive.
You know? No, I know what you mean.
But I don't know what my plans are for this coming 2026. However, I would like to get at least a week of legitimate expedition herping in. And if I could see your shimmering face, that would make it all the better.
Well, I am planning on popping over. Which would be lovely. I've got Tenerife to see the beautiful, stunning Tenerife lizard. I got that in a few weeks. Cool. And then 2026, got nothing in the diary at the minute. We're looking at doing the montane form of Vipera Ursini in France, which would be cool. I've only seen the lowland form, so I see that the highland form would be really, really cool. So that'll be one trip. The main target. We are talking about a Georgia trip.
Very cool.
As in
Asia Georgia.
Asia Georgia, not American Georgia, because the vipers there are incredible.
Just off the fucking charts.
You've got Kaznikovai, Eriwinensis, Rinaldi, Dakini, Transcaucasia. Just beautiful, beautiful vipers. So, yeah, that's on the cards. I want to come out and see you.
Yeah, we need to get back to Arizona.
Yeah, I would love to do another Arizona trip.
Yeah, I really, as much as I, West Texas continues to call to me, and I need to find Trans-Pecos Copperhead in the wild. I need to find a fucking Subok in the wild. I really feel like I need to get back to Arizona because we need Price Eye. I need
Price Eye. I need Tigris.
Yeah,
there's another one in Arizona that I still need. Or that then
there. I don't have a Sidewinder. Any of them. So I know. I don't have any of the Grand Canyon species because I wasn't part of that expedition.
But you don't know. You weren't there, man.
What's that?
I said you don't know. You weren't there, man.
Yeah, I know, right? I know.
It was hard times.
I want to do it again. I want to do it. So it's going to happen eventually.
Do it, but camp.
Yeah. Yeah,
camp at the bottom and then kind come of up the next day. Yeah, don't try and do all of it.
How you say it like you're not going to be there.
Oh, fuck yeah. Of course I'm going to be there.
You're going to be there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm open for anything. As I say, I've got no real European stuff that is desperate for me to do anymore. So yeah. I'm really flexible.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that we can, the two of us, can get Price Eye this year.
Oh, that is, and I really, nice.
I want to soak it in as much as possible because for a while I did Arizona, what I think 3 years in a row. And, you know, it's like, oh, cool, we're going to go this year. And then I took a couple of years off and like the air, like the Chiricahua air, like I'm the Huachuca's air, like I miss that shit.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah, it's such a beautiful part of the world. And the speeches are phenomenal, but yeah, Price Eye
it needs to happen. Yeah,
it needs to happen. Sure, there was another rattlesnake in that area that I needed.
I mean, besides Obscurus.
Obscurus, obviously, yeah. But no, I'm sure there was one more. Where'd you get Rubra?
Rubra's California.
Oh, it's not that.
I mean, there might be Rubra in Western Arizona. I don't know, but as far as I know, Rubra's California.
Okay. Yes, still a lot to do, but no, I'm open. I'm up for anything.
Yeah, yeah. Oh well, we're stacked, man. We are, and everything else is good with you and your collection and your neck of the woods.
Yeah, all is good. I'm as we speak today. I have been building 8-foot vivs from marine ply.
Okay. Okay. As
my Apodora keep destroying custom-made vivs.
And you think that's going to hold them?
I think 20-millimeter marine ply will hold them.
Okay, fair enough. 20-millimeter, fair enough.
I think I could keep a tiger in there and it's not going to get out.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. What are you using to fasten it?
I don't know what they're called in the States. We call them turbo screws.
Okay.
It's industrial.
Yeah, 5-millimeter bolts.
Yeah,
it's aircraft rivets.
The nice thing is, when I'm building it, I can get inside it to paint it and stuff. That's cool.
So, yeah, you literally just aircraft rivet the whole thing. Yeah, just impact gun. Yeah,
yeah, 100%.
Okay,
because I keep destroying rivs, so I thought it's costing me about, I suppose, I don't know, 400 or 500 quid to build
now,
these.
Are you going to do the aggressive animal door where instead of having a glass door, it is panel with a small window?
No, I want to see them. There's no
okay. Okay. I don't know if they keep.
Yeah. They're not aggressive. It's just they're very, very strong.
No, and I didn't mean it in that regard, but I know a lot of people that keep big retics and some big berms and anacondas. The snake goes to stretch and it just pushes. And it breaks out that glass or pops out the track.
Yeah, I've had that a couple of times. Yeah. I'm putting big runners with small glass.
Oh, okay.
There's no, you know, I want to be able to see them when I'm in the room.
Yeah, understandable.
I'm minimizing what can go on.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So
that's LED light strips everywhere.
I've just bought these really cool lights. They are a foot and a half long. Like, they're kind of like sad lights, for want of a better word. Sad seasonal adjustment disorder lights.
Okay. Yeah. Seasonal adjustment disorder. What the hell is the seasonal adjustment disorder?
You don't get it because you live in Florida.
Yeah, you're right. You're talking about like in winter when it's cold and gray and everyone's sad and depressed?
Exactly that, yeah. They just give out high lumens. It's like sunshine.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, God.
Don't mock us with our...
I yearn for the darkness.
Temperate climates. No, you don't.
don't mock us in our deciduous trees.
With your high levels of vitamin D.
God.
Yeah, it's already grim here. It's
I was outside for 20 minutes today, walking from car from carport to carport, and I didn't even look at what the UV index is for this is October now. What's the UV index? Oh, right now it's only a 2 because it's cloudy. Oh,
bless your heart.
And it's 84 degrees Fahrenheit.
I was working in the garden doing these vids today.
76% humidity.
Fuck's sake. Yeah. I had a big hoodie on. Oh, that's what it's like here.
I miss hoodies, man. God, I wear them like 2 days a year.
Oh, my God, no. It's, give it another month, it'll be puffer jacket wear in the UK.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what I always wanted, but I couldn't do it? One of those poofy ski vests where the arms are exposed.
Oh, gilets.
Yeah, that Marty McFly vest,
I love that's your go-to.
It is. It's the American, it's a Marty McFly vest.
Okay, then. Yeah. Just like everyone in the world wears them here to walk their dog.
Is that really what it is?
Yeah, literally.
Nice.
Everyone's got a North Face gilet, surely.
Yeah, if I ever had one, I would die of asphyxiation down here.
Yes, it is very different. So that's all I've been doing, really. Collection's doing well. Just feeding everything up because I'm going to cut feeding at the end of this month and then start putting stuff together.
Are we still dabbling in Dendrobates, Phyllobates, Ranitamea?
Oh, yeah, mate. I've got some Phyllobates coming. I've got some Phyllobates lugubrious coming.
Sweet.
I've set up three of all those nice new dark frog vivs that I got. Nice. I set up three of those. Got a beautiful.
You never sent me pictures of those.
Oh, I'm sorry, mate. I'll send you some pictures.
He sends me pictures of them off the Craigslist ad, all covered in dust and cobwebs. But he doesn't send me the lush jungle at home.
I got a really nice fogger system.
Oh, nice. What is it?
I'm obsessed with it. It's a French company, Gilbert or something like that.
Okay.
And it makes clouds. There's no two ways about it.
Really?
It's amazing. Like
ground fog or actual clouds in the top of the tank?
It fills the tanks with fog.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's really good.
What is it? Still use a like a disc solenoid or?
You don't put it in. It stands outside the VIV. It's
okay.
Probably about a foot high by 6 inches wide.
Okay.
You fill it with water. It's got tubing. It's got pipes coming off of it, which go to
accordion tube.
Accordion tube to. At the minute, I've got one set up for three VIVs, and it's on a timer. You can have it coming on. It's completely random, but at the minute I've got it coming on twice a day for 2 minutes, and it just seems
2 minutes.
Yeah, it looks, but literally just like cloud forest.
That's so cool.
And no noise, which is really good.
Really? So it doesn't have that.
No, it's really good bit of kit. I want to get another one, so I'm going to do some of the Felsumas with it as well. Not all of them, but some of them that come from. Areas with high humidity, I'll do those. But for dark forest, absolutely superb.
I just saw Underground had someone. They have Underground has several local dart frog breeders that's just their hobby, and they wholesale out to them. I'd never seen this before. It's to my knowledge, it was a form of Pomelio, but it was white with orange spots.
Oh. Yeah,
and it was so freaking cool, and they were screaming at each other, just happy as hell.
Wow! And
I honestly had to stop myself because, you know, I've got the desert room. They wouldn't.
Yeah, well. Where are you going to keep
them? Yeah, where am I going to put them? And I was like, I'm not putting these screaming things in my bedroom. But yeah, they were going bananas in there. I don't know if it was for their food or for each other or male rivalry. I don't know. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they were a form of familial.
Oh, wow. Typical, you know what it's like when you go on a herp trip. I'm just looking at European vipers again now going, them. Why did I get rid of my vipers?
I honestly feel like when you got rid of the pygmies, I understood. But when you got rid of the Vipera, that was knee jerk.
It was. Absolutely. It was too
soon. No one's judging you for it.
No.
But it was definitely knee jerk.
No, 100%. I agree. So, yeah, I'm just thinking everyone needs a Sini in their life. So, yeah.
Just something, man.
Just something.
I wish you could field collect your own. I do.
I don't think I would.
You wouldn't?
No, I know it's super hypocritical because obviously the ones I'm getting were originally field collective sometime. But right. I don't know. I just wouldn't feel. Number one, I don't think European vipers do well when they're field collected. I think they're super sensitive. And I think rattlesnakes, by the nature of the areas that they live in, are much hardier than European
vipers. More forgiving.
More forgiving, you know. Yeah. If you're looking at an Aatrox that's living in a desert in Arizona, being put in a viv anywhere is better.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at a species like Daniki, which lives in lush alpine meadows with high UV,
gorgeous.
And food, which is eating, you know, everything's got B12 in it, everything like that, and then you stick it in a viv, it doesn't do well.
Yeah, but see, I feel like of all the people I know, you would have no problem planting alpine grasses.
Oh, no, I would.
And making a Julie Andrews tank.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, oh, mate, yeah.
I won't lie. That is a fantasy of mine for the distant future of having a meadow in a tank.
Oh, for Vipera Kasnikovai, can you imagine?
Oh, yeah. Or even Daniki, man. That would be super cool. It wouldn't have to be that big a viv.
It wouldn't have to be big, but yeah.
Yeah, and then think about this. Pressure fans that are equalized with their own sensors, much like a CNC machine, where you set the barometric pressure within the viv via fans pulling and pushing.
I'm sure there are Germans and Austrians that are already doing that.
Yeah. When I'm a grown up, I'll do it.
To be fair, I think like Kasnikovai, Daniki, I'm sure will do really well outdoors in the UK.
I believe it.
You know, but then again, like our sort of similar species to rattlesnakes. So if we're looking at Eriwinensis and Lotievi and stuff like that, where they come from is super harsh. So I think I've kept Lotievi before. And that they did fine. And Renardi seems to be bombproof. Renardi's so, what's the word? It's in so many different habitats. I think you've got to try really hard to get it wrong.
The reason I brought it up is because we just had Jake join us on Snakes and Stokers. We hadn't recorded an episode in a few weeks. And we're like, oh, Jake, come on in, man. Let's just have a hangout session tonight. And he was saying that he is at a junction when he will be able to keep something venomous. And he was debating field collecting something himself. Now, we have our own personal rules with field collection is that we don't want a newborn neonate simply because it hasn't had a chance to live its life. And at the same time, it's difficult to acclimate. So we usually look for something that's less than a year old, juvenile of some sort. That way we're not taking adult animals or sexually mature animals out of the wild. And it's an ethics thing, right? But I was just talking to Jake about picking the species that's easily attained for him so that he can have a herping, a quest or a mission or what have you. And he can be very super selective. So we went out deciding on a Southern Copperhead because he sees so many of them and there's a particular phenotype he's looking for. So now he's going to go to this one specific area where he has several other animals from that area. It's local to him. It has very much a home team, home turf advantage, you know? And I feel like that'd be really cool to do in Europe if you could.
If you could, and I get that, because if it starts to not do well, you can always release it.
Exactly. And that actually got brought up too, is that he'll be keeping it in his bedroom completely away from the collection because, like myself, he's very neurotic about cross-contamination. And
100%,
God forbid we have some kind of captive spread pathogen, I would hate to be the person responsible for infecting the local populace. So for him to field collect it, keep it isolated in perpetual quarantine, not only can he keep tabs on it better that way and strictly be a pet, but if he finds out, hey, this really isn't for me, he can let it go. No harm, no foul. Right.
Yeah, 100%. Right. I mean, the only thing like that, I mean, I could potentially do would be to keep Berus, Papyra Berus.
Right.
I wouldn't wild collect one.
Yeah, I understand.
But, you know, Berus I could keep in the garden because I've got Berus a few miles away from where I live.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's doable. But no, I mean, if I could afford it, I'd buy cats and a cobra tomorrow. But they are expensive.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, they are.
But there's some very pretty little vipers, which my interest has been re-peaked, having seen. I mean, Suwannee is stunning, and that stays really small.
Yeah.
And you could have a stripy one and a normal one. Or two.
Or four.
Or four, yeah.
Or two, 2.2.
Yes. 2.2, yeah. 2. So, yeah, we should see. But, yeah, that's interesting.
Very good stuff. Good, good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we're at the witching hour, sir.
Okay, okay.
Anything you'd like to touch base on before we wrap things up?
No, I'm good. Just to say thanks to everybody for listening to us. Yeah. Hopefully this episode doesn't cut off strangely at the end.
Yeah, I'm going to investigate. This is now two episodes we've had this happen, correct?
Yeah, it's very strange.
So if anyone's listening,
it's kind of missing the last 5-10 minutes of the episodes, which is very odd.
Yeah, and I'm going to, I'm basically going to proofread everything and find a proof listen, I should say. I don't think it's my editing software. I think it's an issue with the RSS feed. And I'm wondering if it's duration, because the last two episodes we did were much longer than normal.
Oh, possibly.
So I don't know if it was some kind of data thing or what, but I'm going to get to the bottom of it. And my apologies to everyone. My apologies to those other guests that got cut short. So.
Yeah. That's cool. As I say, thanks for listening, folks. We genuinely appreciate it. Enjoy your herping. Enjoy your venomous keeping. Try and follow me on Facebook, Instagram.
Yes.
Follow the Venom Exchange Facebook and Instagram.
VenomExchangeRadio.com.
Yes, and that is it. And join us next time. Thank you very much.
Bye.